This episode is sponsored by Fry's Family Foods to celebrate the launch of their new Tea Time Saviour, the totally delicious and 100% vegan Stars and Moons.
The breaded shapes are a great source of fibre and protein, ideal if you want more meat-free meals for the kids.
They cook from the freezer in just 10 minutes, which means I already love them. A fuss-free kids' tea time that you know they'll polish off? Yes, please.
Now, on with the show.
You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy College. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
On this week's show...
You've got to show them that you can make mistakes and own those mistakes, because they're going to have to do that as well. So nobody likes admitting they're wrong, do they? So, but for them, that's really empowering, I think, when they're teenagers, to see you say, do you know what, I wasn't right about that, or... Yep, you can go to that party and come back at midnight. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. You know, and trust them that they're going to make good decisions at that party, you know. And then when they don't, it's them saying, yeah, I shouldn't have done that.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. Now, first of all, I'm a bit solo this morning because it's going to be one of those mornings. Annie is currently stuck in traffic. So at some point on this pod, I'm hoping she'll join us. She might not. And I was going to kick off by... having a moan at Annie, because the juggle this morning has been real. One of my kids is having anxiety attacks about her first ever school residential. The other is weeping in the classroom because her dad is away. And the only person who can walk the dog in our house, who is me, has done her back in. So I was going to say, help me, Annie, but I can't because she's not here. So instead, help me, Gabby Logan. What do I do?
Good morning. Well, it sounds not massively dissimilar to my house this morning. My husband's also away, and the kids have to be in the car by 7:20 to get to the bus. Otherwise, I've got an hour and a half round trip to take him to school. And at the moment that I was still shouting at my son for having no trousers on and 5 minutes to get in the car and hadn't had any breakfast, somebody arrived at the gate with a massive load of tiles. And the dogs were barking because they hadn't been fed. And so then I had to kind of get this guy, position him where he needed to be to offload the tiles because the builders were arriving. And then at that moment, the gardener arrived as well. It was literally like 5 minutes of utter madness. And then we got in the car and my son said, I don't know why you stress so much about leaving on time. Which at that moment, had it not been kind of the fact that I was driving a car, I think I'd have turned around and given them a right good kind of, apart from the fact he's 6'6". So no, I wouldn't actually have slapped him. But I was kind of, yeah, very much the same. And then I kind of drove back from dropping off the bus thinking, oh, I didn't need to be quite so stressed.
You've got twins, haven't you? How old are they now?
Yeah, they are 16. They've just done their mock, A-level mocks. They're 17 in July.
Oh, wow.
So we're in the final run, the home run, really, with school. We've got another year to go.
How are the teen years, Gabby? I'm kind of dreading them. I've got a 10 and a six-year-old, and they are delightful and deranged in equal measure. Does it get better? Does it get worse?
Definitely different. I would say the challenges are different. And the thing about babies is actually there's loads and loads of advice about, you know, different ways to potty train, different ways to wean, different ways to kind of, you know, get sleep regulated. There's all kinds of different schools of thought, and something will work for you. With teenagers, no two are the same in terms of the challenges and the dynamics that they kind of, the people that they're with. And so, and then, you know, that whole kind of, you're never as happy as you're only as happy as your least happy child is never more true in the teenage years, because, you know, one will have it all going on, everything will be great. And then the other one will have, you know, kind of minor existential crisis. And so you're kind of swinging emotionally and trying to keep a balance of things. On the one hand, I think it is the most challenging period of parenting. On the other, it's the most rewarding. So I think that's kind of that. I'm sorry, that doesn't help very much, but I think it's incredibly it's an exhilarating kind of roller coaster ride.
It must be weird now that your son is bigger than you.
Well, he's been bigger than me since I was 11. Since he was 11, well, he's 6'6", my son. So he's been bigger than my husband for the last 3 years as well. So yeah, that bit of it, that physical part of it, happened quite early in terms of that feeling of, oh my gosh, you've got this kind of like mini man in the house. Now he's just good for picking me up and giving me a back crack if I want one. Or he does have ginormous hands. So he'll come and I'll say, I've got a knot here. And he'll come and, you know, put his big thumbs in there and give you a really good little massage. So that's quite handy, his ginormous size. What it's not handy is keeping a full fridge. I mean, he just plows through food. And it is, I look at a fridge and think it's full on a Saturday morning. And by Sunday evening, I'm like, where did they all go? Like last Sunday I was working, I was doing the Women's FA Cup final. And I knew there was a load of meat in because we were going to have a barbecue and I bought some fish as well and various other things. And when I got back, I said, Kenny was putting this food out because he put the barbecue on. And I said, where are the sausages? And he'd eaten 8 sausages as a snack earlier in the day. So he just popped them in the oven on his own and that was it. You know, I can get one of those whole roasted chickens, you know, the ones that are already pre-cooked. He'll just have that as a snack. So it is that bit. I don't want to push them out of the house. I don't want them particularly to leave home, but I am looking forward to not. And it's not even, I mean, the expense is one thing. It's just the constant visiting of the supermarket. You know,
no one needs that.
Why don't you just get a delivery? It doesn't make any difference, Mum. It's like, it just doesn't, you know.
You still have to think to do the delivery. And it's just the constant, is there enough food?
The way he describes it to me, because he does a lot of sport, you know, he'll say, Mum, I get hungry in the night. I wake up at 3 sometimes and I'm hungry. And I think as a middle-aged woman, I'd love to be that hungry.
Do you know, my husband remembers when he's talking about kind of his teen years, he says his resounding memory of his teen years is being hungry. I think boys are just hungry.
Yeah. And that's why I try and fill him up on protein and things as well as slow releasing carbohydrates so that it's not just quick fix food. That's what I try to explain to him. If you put sweet snacks down your throat that you think are giving you energy, an hour later you're going to be hungry again. So I'm always trying to, you know, give him good messages about food. He's slightly getting it. He had some overnight oats this morning for breakfast, but only because it was a hurry and he was normally to have eggs. And I'm interested to learn if he's actually gone a bit longer, if they've lasted a bit longer.
He's ravenous again.
He'll tell me, no doubt, or his Go Henry card will ping up that he's in the local Tesco's at break time, you know.
Now, you always strike me, Gabby, as someone who's kind of got it sorted. I don't know why, but you just always seem, obviously, when I see you, you're presenting, you seem like you've got this work-life mum balance business sorted. And then you did some Wim Hofing and now you seem to me like Superwoman. So
I think the thing about the work-life mum balance is recognizing that you'll never get it sorted. And I think when you realize that at some stage that you think, I'm never actually going to get this perfectly in balance, then you cut yourself some slack about it, you know. So I said to my daughter yesterday, just funnily enough, last night we were having a chat, and I said, because I've taken on quite a lot of things at the moment that just extra kind of like charitable things and, you know, chairing a committee and things like that, that take up extra time that you don't see on the telly and things, but it just takes time. And I said to my daughter, do you feel like I'm here enough at the moment? And she was like, yeah, you're here loads at the moment. You know, it's different when you go away for a few weeks. So, you know, you're always kind of thinking about whether or not that you're present. Are you present enough? And, you know, is there, you know, I mean, I do see, I'm very lucky because I get to work from home a lot as well. I do see a lot of my family. I'm not having to go into an office all day long. And I think that is one thing that, you know, when the kids were little, I was very lucky, because although you'd see me on the telly, then I might be prepping at home for 3 days. And, you know, so
sorry.
Hello.
Blame my husband's gammy, lumpy leg.
We didn't tell anyone why you weren't here. I just said you were stuck in traffic.
Sorry. It was a hospital dash for the husband.
Yeah. Now the image of a gammy leg.
Annie, meet Gabby. Gabby, meet Annie.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
So I was just about to ask Gabby to basically, I am now a little bit addicted to the man that is Wim, and I need you to tell me.
My whole family are addicted.
Was it as amazing as it looked, and has changed you as a person and as a mum? It seems like it might have done.
I feel changed just from watching the show.
It does have a profound effect going through all of that. And we were really lucky, I think, as a group, we got on very well, which I think you can see in the show. And we also, I think, realised there were enough of us in there who were a bit older, myself and Tamsin and maybe Patrice, Alfie, who realised that this is a unique experience. And although some days things are going to be really challenging, we wanted to really live it every day and not be wishing it away and trying to get to the end of it. Do you know what I mean? And we wanted to really absorb it all. And we made that as a concerted kind of decision and as a conversation we had out loud early on in the process. So I think that really gave us a strength, actually, because sometimes when you're in an uncomfortable position, you're just thinking, when this ends, I know I'll appreciate it, but right now I'm not enjoying it. And actually, we really enjoyed it, really embraced it. He was obviously a huge factor in that whim. He's an incredible, I think he really came into his own on the final episode. I won't spoil it if people haven't seen it yet or if you want to catch up on iPlayer.
I've recorded it. So ladies and gents listening, the final episode was on TV last night, but it's at 9, which is after my children's bedtimes, and they're obsessed with it as well. So we're all going to sit down and watch it tonight.
A lot of people have been watching it actually the day after. It's interesting because my builder's in today and I've known him for about 20 years and he said, don't tell me, I haven't watched it yet.
See, I'm up to the one where you're doing the swim under the ice.
That
I found that so stressful to watch.
And the bit, I've only got to the bit where basically you all thought Wim had got lost or was dead because he kept going and didn't come up. So then the kids needed, you know, I'm watching
go to bed. What I love is hearing that kids are watching it as well. A lot of my friends with younger kids are really enjoying it.
They're so impressed that I'm talking to you today. They're like, I'm like, yeah,
oh, it's so lovely because, you know, when you do sport, people connect with you in a different way. You know, people come up to me and ask me if Everton are going to survive in the Premier League, or they come up and talk about, you know, some rugby match. And this has been such a lovely thing. People come, you know, when I my local supermarket, and they know me. We're just discussing, by the way, about how much my son eats, and they know me very well in there anyway. But all the women in there keep coming up going, like the people that work there going, oh my God, I can't believe the ice. Oh my God, I can't believe this. And it's, you know, the thing I really loved about the show, two things that made me really want to do it. One, it wasn't a competition. So I knew it would have a different dynamic. It wasn't going to be, I'm going to use Professor Green's phrase here. He said it was rehabilitation, not humiliation. And I think that was a really important thing for me, that we were going to come through this without having to go kind of do things that made us, you know, kind of people laugh at us or people be cruel about us to try and get us, you know, over the line of winning. So I didn't want to win something.
It changes the edit, doesn't it? If you're not being pitted against each other, it's a very different watch.
Yeah, it changes the dynamic and the narrative, yeah.
And it kind of cheap, in a way, it sort of lessens it. Like this was about, well, this is what I've taken from it. It was about you all growing and finding something within yourself that you probably couldn't put your finger on before. And if there had been a competitive element to that, it kind of would have not allowed that to happen, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I did an interview actually with Five Live ahead of the last episode. And Claire McDonald, the presenter, said, do you think this will change kind of the way commissioners look at these kinds of shows? And I said, yeah, I hope so, because I think it proves that you can entertain without having that element to it. I mean, commercial channels want people to vote so they can make money, obviously. So there's that element to it. But I think, in a way, that this show is kind of the very best of what the BBC does, because it was informative, educational, entertaining. You know, it had all those pillars, I think, to it. And we didn't know at the beginning what it was going to be, you know.
But it's nice, because if what happens in those competitive shows is sometimes the person you really like gets booted out halfway through and then you don't want to watch in the same way. So you guys were all still there, freezing your tits off quite merrily for the whole time. Has it changed? Like, has it? You know, are there things that you learned that you're going to share with the kids?
Yeah, I mean, my kids already...
Have they watched?
Yeah, they have.
And what did they think?
They were really, like, my daughter last night just kind of when I... Oh, I'm not going to talk this, spoil it. But, you know, when I was doing it, she got quite emotional, you know, and she was... They've both been the first episode in particular and the second episode. I think they were all really shocked because they didn't know what it was. I was trying to... I did tell them about it, obviously, when I came back. But it must be hard to fully explain. Yeah,
because it's quite strange.
It's quite strange.
They must think you're absolutely badass after this, even more than they did already.
Yeah, I think they were... It was funny. When I first came back, we were talking about being changed. I definitely felt different and I felt empowered and felt a kind of renewed
energy. So it lasted
energy.
Then.
Yeah, yeah. And then, but then occasionally they'll say to me, if I'm obviously, we're just discussing the morning kind of hustle this morning, you know, the kind of usual juggle. And occasionally they'll say, I think you need to go back to Italy for a few weeks, Mum. Yeah, it's just wearing off now.
Have you carried it on?
Yeah, cold showering. And my husband now is really addicted to cold showers.
And what about the breath?
The breathing. I did a big breathing thing on Saturday. Friday night, we were doing a charity event and I was absolutely shattered. I'd had a really busy week. I thought, I don't want to have a nap. I'm going to go do some breathing. And I'm not just saying, I woke up from the breathing. I came around from the breathing. I felt like I'd had 10 hours sleep. It was so restorative, you know, and it really does does energize you.
Yeah, because that was the thing I took from watching you all, was that almost the most transformative experiences you had were in those lying down, breathing things. It seemed to really tap into something very emotional for you, particularly around your brother and grief. Did you think it would take you there?
No, I didn't know. And it was, I mean, the first time we did it, it was, that was very much kind of about my brother. And I was, you know, grief isn't something that just disappears forever, even though he's been gone 30 years now, 30 years next week. It sometimes just kind of blindsides you and comes along again into your life, you know, and something just triggers. And I think that's because grief, as somebody once very wise said, grief is love with nowhere to go. And that doesn't mean that you completely stop loving that person. You can't, even though the passage of time means that you no longer miss them in the same way because you haven't got their physical presence. But it didn't surprise me because it's so deeply emotional. But what did surprise me was what happened with Tamsin. You know, I had this like unbelievable feeling of her mum.
And you hadn't known her mum, had you?
No, I didn't know Tamsin till the week before. And I only briefly in passing had she mentioned that her mum, the reason that she was worried about the show personally was because her mum had died very suddenly and she was concerned about the ice was going to affect her. And was she going to leave her kids suddenly? And that was the only thing I knew. And then, I mean, I couldn't even see. It was this unbelievable feeling of love. Like if you could actually put love in a box, you know, and it was a tangible thing. And I just went over to her and I said, your mum's here and she's just sending you all this love. And she said, I know. And we both had this massive hug. And I think that was such a bonding thing for Tamsin and I, because we didn't know each other really, but there was this real connection then. I think a trust as well. And, you know, I did have very, very vivid kind of images coming into my mind whenever I was doing the breathing, and very, very visceral kind of physical feelings. And, you know, it was really, that was definitely the most powerful thing, I would say, out of everything.
It's mind blowing. It's absolutely mind blowing. I really want to go and live with Wim Hof.
I do know, I realize how incredibly lucky we are to have that time with him. You know, it's just, you know, he sent me a lovely message the other day, but if I never see him again, then I'm just, that's a special period, you know, that we all had.
Absolutely.
So who are your kind of like go-to mums? Are they the mums that you knew when your kids were NCT? Are they like way back when? Have you got that mum support network?
Well, I've got, so my best friend had three children in under 14 months by accident.
Oh.
So she got pregnant.
Ouch.
Yeah. She got pregnant without, definitely wasn't planned, first baby. Well, not, none of them were. She'd only been together with her now husband for about a year at that point, I think. And they got pregnant and my goddaughter was born. And then she accidentally got pregnant again within 3 months and she had twin girls a year.
Oh, Lord. So, Lord.
So she had Ava and Darcy, the twins, a year before I had Reuben and Lois. She didn't know I was going through IVF at that point because I decided not to tell anybody I was going through IVF.
Even your good friends?
Yeah, because I just didn't want to, if I was going to go do it 5-6 times, I just didn't want it to become my thing, that everybody only talked to me about that. So I thought, let's see how this one goes.
Was that hard though, not having someone to rely on in that way?
Well, I had Kenny. Okay. I had Kenny. And I think I thought that if it didn't, then maybe I would after that. But I wanted to see how the first round went. So anyway, she didn't know. And when I go around her house, you can imagine what that was like. You know, it was chaos central. So I was kind of like, I'm not going to throw my issues into the mix here, because her husband was an actor and he decided to take a play somewhere abroad. So she was at home with all these babies. So you can imagine having her was a bit of an oracle, you know, in terms of going to her to ask questions. And then I had another friend who's now got four kids. And at that point, she had two. And she was Jane, she's called. And so Jane was just Mrs. NCT. She knew everything. And she'd come around and say, I hope you don't mind me saying, but I think Lois, the reason why she's waking up is she needs an extra blanket. Or she was just, I was like, say what you like. Just tell me what you want. Yeah, tell me. I used to say to her later in life, I'm going to write a book called Just Ask Jane, because I'd ring her up and say, Ruben hasn't pooed for 3 days. Is that okay? What should I do? Because I was kind of like, I don't care about asking for help because I don't know. I really don't know. And
not born knowing it all, are you?
No, exactly. And we were just talking about the challenge of teenage years, which, again, it's a different set of issues. So actually your focal points and your questions might, or people that you refer to might be quite different then, because Kerry, for example, my friend with the three girls, hasn't got a boy. So I wouldn't necessarily go to her and say, you know, Ruben's done this. Is this normal for a teenage boy? Because she wouldn't know, you know. So then you kind of have different friends who go, well, yeah, my son, you know, he went through that phase or whatever it is that you're, you know, concerned about.
Has there been a phase that you've loved more than the others? Like, are you a baby woman, a toddler woman? Are you loving the teens?
I do love now in the same way that I love and hate a roller coaster ride. Do you know what I mean? Is that that's what the moment feels like with the teen years. But the that I think it was like 6 to say 11 where you are a god, a hero, you can do no wrong. You know, that period where they still think that you have all the answers and, you know, you try occasionally to show them you are fallible because you don't want them putting you on too high a pedestal, but they just have that amazing kind of my husband would call it respect, and I always say to him, you can't call it respect because it sounds, but you know, when they just feel so beholden to you and they love being with you, they want to go everywhere with you, and then suddenly there comes a stage where they're not so keen to do everything with you, and then you have to take your own ego out of that. Yeah, you kind of go, no, it's not about me. But you know, they accept holidays, they still like doing that, you know, which is obviously they want somebody to pay for their holidays. But no, I do enjoy now. It's just going too quickly.
Now back to Fry's Family Foods totally tasty stars and moons.
Now I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for easy ways to feed my kids more plant-based meals, and these fun breaded shapes are just the job. A source of protein and fiber, they make a brilliant swap for the usual chicken nuggets.
They're also Net Mums recommended, which, if I say so myself, is kind of a big deal. In a poll of 50 Net Mums members, 98% said they'd recommend Fry's Moons and Stars to friends and family. That's good enough for me.
Pick up a pack of Fry's Stars and Moons from Iceland or the Food Warehouse. Now, back to the guest.
Do you think things like doing WIM, and I know you've got your podcast now, do you feel like you're reclaiming a bit more Gabby now that they're getting older? Do you think that's the natural shift that's occurring for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm kind of almost subconsciously preparing myself by doing those kinds of things, because we had a chat about this with a friend the other day about that kind of divergent goals that couples sometimes find out they've got when, you know, when their kids leave home and they suddenly go, oh, I didn't know you were going to go to Florence for a year to do art. What? I didn't know you were going to go. Yeah. Hang on. Why are you going off on a boat in Bali? You know? So I think, you know, obviously keeping that conversation alive is something that we've been really mindful of, but also not losing, you know, who you are, because obviously you're going to be back with you again, aren't you? And I mean the I, yeah, you know, the yeah. person, because you spend so much of your time thinking about them and thinking about what they're doing. And how they're, you know, everything, the minutiae of life, isn't it, that you just, you know, constantly on top of, and you're trying to pull back a bit to let them make mistakes, to let them start to, you know, reclaim or claim their own independence, and watching them kind of do things where you think, oh no, I would have done it that way, but I'm going to just let you do it this way so that we can, you know.
That's the bit I'm going to find really hard, is keeping my trap shut.
It's really hard. And I've made lots of mistakes where I haven't bit my tongue, and, you know, and I have said things, and then one of us, Kenny and I wouldn't say either of us are always one way or the other. We both kind of get it right and wrong. And the other one recognizes that and goes, come on, have a word, you know, go back, just apologize about that, you know, because that's the thing as well. It's, when I said before about 6 to 11 being that stage where they just think you're amazing, you've got to show them that you can make mistakes and own those mistakes, because they're going to have to do that as well. So that's quite hard, you know, because nobody likes admitting they're wrong, do they? So, but for them, that's really empowering, I think, when they're teenagers, to see you say, do you know what, I wasn't right about that. Or, yep, you can go to that party and come back at midnight. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. You know, and trust them that they're going to make good decisions at that party, you know. And then when they don't, if they make a, you know, a slip up, it's them a few days later saying, yeah, I shouldn't have done that, or that meant I didn't do as well in that exam because I didn't revise as hard as you know, suggested I should, or whatever the thing is. But yeah, it is tricky, especially, I mean, you know, I am a self-confessed control freak. So my name's Gabby and I am a control freak.
Now, I want to talk to you about this podcast of yours, because as two women approaching said midpoint, and
what are we counting as the midpoint? Is there a number?
Well, at the beginning of the podcast, I researched this, and the Economic and Social Research Council said midlife is 38 to 54. And anybody in their 30s who hears that bulks and goes, yeah, what? I'm not in midlife yet. Yeah, but I think, see, women, I think, associate it with perimenopause and menopause and the physical changes. Men, not so much. They don't kind of see that physical thing as being the midlife. It's almost like a state of mind, I think, from my learnings. You know, I've done about 40 episodes now. So, yeah, I kind of feel like anybody in their late 30s can come on the podcast in midpoint. And I've actually gone up to Richard Madeley. What's he, 66? Because I thought it's quite good having a guest who can look back and say, oh, and he was really honest about Judy, his wife, Judy Finnegan's menopause and how that affected them. And I really like talking to husbands and partners about that, because I think that's a really important conversation.
Menopause is a hot topic at the moment. And as someone who is...
No pun intended.
Someone who... I'm 43, so I'm definitely in your midpoint. And I just feel like we might get a little bit more slack cut than even, you know, people did 5 years ago. Women are talking about menopause. They're understanding perimenopause, and men actually give a shit for once.
Yeah, yeah.
We're so fortunate to be alive right now, I think.
Yeah, definitely. When you think about the amount of women who must have just kind of moved away from their careers or left marriages, you know, all those things because of a lack of support, whether it was an understanding about HRT or availability or conversations about symptoms that they perhaps didn't associate with menopause. You know, there's something like 34 recognized symptoms that range from, you know, brain fog and hot flushes are the kind of most commonly known things, but there's all sorts of stuff that people don't realize could be that, and they think it's something else, or they get prescribed medicine for something that's not there. So that and also, you probably know this already, but only at the moment 60% of medical schools actually teach their doctors about menopause. So there's a campaign to increase that to 100%, funnily enough, because we believe that all doctors should have some knowledge about the menopause and not just be reliant on flicking through a textbook on their desk if somebody comes in, you know. So I think doctors want to. It's not their fault that that's what the curriculum has been. You know, that's what their courses have had. So
who's been your favourite guest so far? If you have...
Oh, you can't.
Well, not favourite because you love them. Or maybe most surprising, or the one that you learned the most from...
When I first started the whole thing, I had in my mind that I wanted to motivate people to not feel beige in middle age, not feel that they couldn't pursue their dreams and goals. And so it was more about that at the very beginning. And so the first guests, I kind of chose people who'd done big things in that period of life. So John Bishop was my first guest because at 40, he was still selling pharmaceutical drugs. At 42, he was selling out Echo Arena in Liverpool, you know. So I kind of liked the idea that don't just park your goals because you've turned 40. Don't just park your dreams. And then Denise Lewis was on, who, one of my colleagues at BBC Sport, obviously Olympic gold medalist, who had her fourth baby at 47 because she was desperate. That wasn't an accident. She was desperate to have another child and went through a lot to get her final child. And I think that's not always possible for people, but I think that life kind of shift as well when you have a baby a bit later, when you've already got, you know, family was interesting, because normally it's men who do that. Normally you meet Jimmy Carr's been on, you know, he had his first baby at 50. Well, he didn't, did he? Yeah. You know, so I liked kind of those guests that were doing different things. Richard Osman, a brilliant guest, because he was at the time single. I think he's got a girlfriend now, and grown-up kids, and then he just started his writing career, basically, and his first book was out, and now he's one of the best-selling authors in the world, you know, and he hadn't written a book before then. Obviously, he was a clever guy doing very well in telly, but I liked that kind of, the idea of just taking a goal or a dream and just taking that first step, and hopefully that was giving people inspiration. So, yeah, it really is hard to... And then there's people like Claudia Winkleman, who came on and just owned getting older, absolutely loves, you know, can't wait to be in her 60s, is delighted that she doesn't have to go to nightclubs anymore.
Yeah. Who do you want on the pod?
Well, I'd love to have a couple who chat honestly about kind of each other in midlife, you know? And so I thought that ideal couple would be David and Victoria Beckham. But then somebody pointed out to me, they probably don't even realize they're in midlife because they're kind of, you know, they're so super rich and fabulous that the aging will never come. Yeah. So I don't think that there's a cat in hell's chance of that. I don't know, from the US, I'd quite like Gwyneth Paltrow on, just because she'd be quite an interesting midlifer.
Very.
And then I'd quite like, I'd quite like maybe somebody like Michelle Obama from the States. She'd be quite good.
Oh, well. Yeah. That she was who came in my mind when Wendy asked the question, actually.
Yeah, it's because that's who you want on this card.
Have Michelle and Barack. Wouldn't that be a couple to have?
Yeah, well, that would be the dream couple. Yeah, I'm going to do my very best to somehow bump into them somewhere and get them to come on the pod.
You found your inner steel with Wim Hof. You have seeged into a whole new career almost with your amazing podcast. You're a mum of teens. What could possibly be next?
Well, obviously I want to keep on doing the sport that I do. I love, and that takes up a lot of my time. And this summer we've got the Women's Euros, we've got the Commonwealth Games. So that's pretty much, my time is pretty much booked up for a few months. But I've written a book, which is out in October. So I imagine I'll have to do quite a bit of publicity for that in September. And that was I'm really proud of getting it done because I've wanted to do it for a long time, and I did it in lockdown, didn't do anything really with it for about a year. And then I finally took it out there, and kind of, because it's very personal, isn't it, to kind of, when you write a memoir, not quite sure I was ready to share it, you know, and spent a lot of the time when I was in the tent actually in Italy doing Wim Hof worrying about it a bit, you know, and thinking about that.
Did you wrestle with how candid to be? Were you like, oh, I'm not going to share that bit of me? Oh, I don't want that bit out there.
I did. And there are things that I definitely, there's a lot of stuff I haven't. But I wanted to be able to, everything I wrote, I thought I've got to be able to have an honest conversation with that person and stand up, obviously, kind of what I've said. And I wanted a reason to tell that story. There has to be a purpose to it, not just gratuitous, you know?
Yeah, not just vomiting up everything that's ever happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and a purpose for writing, you know, because you, and it's amazing how much I got to about 100,000 words, and there was so much more stuff that I wanted to talk about, but I just didn't have room left in the book. So,
did it give you a fresh perspective on your life and yourself actually writing it all down?
Yeah, it was quite an interesting process because my kids were on Zoom school at the time in early lockdown. We'd have our working day, but luckily for me, they were 15, so they were just getting on with it. And then we'd all come together at either lunchtime or dinner, and they could tell kind of the day of writing that they'd be like, oh, was today tough? Because I'd be a bit quiet. So yeah, it was very cathartic in lots of ways and emotional to write, dig in.
Did it make you see anything differently?
Yes, because I was writing it with that perspective in my mind, thinking, why am I telling this story? And then that made me question kind of my motives, say, at that time, and what was, you know, and owning bad behavior, do you know what I mean? Things that, you know,
ooh,
that
that's tough, Gabby. That's tough.
Yeah, yeah. It was quite.
I can't imagine you being bad.
Well, you know, things that you think that was quite. I shouldn't have. That was a bit hurtful. I shouldn't have done that. You know, and then having to, when the lawyers come back and they say you've got to send it to these people to make sure they're okay with it.
Oh shit! You've got to do that. I didn't know you had to do that. Really?
Well, unless you want to get sued when your book gets published.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you've got to get them to sign off that they're happy. And it was mainly family because most of the stories were kind of to do with that. But there were a couple of people they didn't. And I was quite surprised because, like, one of them was an ex-boyfriend who only comes out of it in glowing terms because he was, when my brother died, he was the next boyfriend I had. And he was the perfect kind of boyfriend for 3 years in my life. And but I'd kind of told some really personal stories about things that happened to us. And they were like, no, that's fine. I was like, I better just tell him out of kind of, you know, I felt like I should let him know.
Okay, so they don't send it to everyone. There's just certain things.
No, there's obviously the lawyer picks out things that they think might potentially have a case for somebody.
So like if you snag off on them at the school gates, it might get sent to
someone. Yeah. Yeah, I none of that going on. But I suppose it's a right to reply as well. So it's been quite. And when that lawyer's document came back to me, I was quite surprised at how much she was questioning. I was like, oh God, this is making me feel sick. But
I want to read it now. Can we get a box copy, please?
Yeah, of course. I'll make sure you get one.
When's it out? October, did you say?
Yeah, October the 12th. It's out. It's 11th. Yeah.
Now, the next question I was going to ask you might be slightly different because normally we ask our guests what's for tea. But what you missed earlier, Annie, is that often whatever is for tea has already been eaten by Gabby's 6'6" rugby playing son.
He sounds like my brother. So my brother is very sporty and is now 42 and he has a key to my mum's house still. And my mum says she knows if he's been because the fridge is empty.
At 42.
So she can go out for the day, come back, and it's like, where's all my food gone?
So what was for tea and what's he eaten that should have been for tea and who's cooking?
Well, tonight, actually, believe it or not, we are going to the theatre as part of my birthday present. So we'll have to pick up some food in town before we go to the theatre. But if it was, say, last night, let's do last night's tea. I made, at request of daughter, she always texts me what she found. I don't suppose she fancy doing a risotto tonight, she'll say.
You like her private chef.
I know. I made a delicious mushroom risotto, which I like making things like that because then there's always a bit of leftover, which said son can then go and heat up for himself at 9 o'clock for his second dinner. So I did a really nice risotto last night and I had to do lamb steaks for him as well as that because that wouldn't be enough risotto. I mean, the bowl of risotto for me is so filling and my daughter, we were quite happy with that, but he needed to have more protein.
This all sounds very good.
He sounds so like my brother. Sometimes you find my brother and be like, so what are you doing? He's like, I'm just going to the butcher. I'm just going to pick up a rib of beef. And you're like, oh, cool. Who's coming over? He's like, oh, no one. I'm just really...
my son's favourite expression, when we go for something like a Japanese or something where you have collective food, he'll say, where you're not ordering individual, you know, meals, he'll say, just make sure you over-order. Make sure you over-order. Because you can see the waitresses or waiters kind of looking at you going, are you sure you're going to eat all this? And I just trust me, honestly, it's fine.
Yes.
It's fine.
Yes, yeah. We are.
But I like now in this country, there's a culture now growing like America where you can take food home as well, which, I don't feel too bad. We can keep it for later. I hate wasting food.
Yeah. We always joke that my brother is part man, part Labrador because he just there's no end.
Isn't it that, red right? setters that are supposed to be able to, they would never stop. Red setters would eat until they die.
They've got no off button in their brain. Yeah. Yeah. We've got a Labradoodle and she's definitely more Labrador than Doodle. In fact, she didn't doodle at all. She looks like a Labrador. And she has been known to, we had to kind of secure everywhere on our kind of like house so that she couldn't get into the road because it was a little lane. It's not a busy road. It wasn't the traffic so much. It was just she'd find where there was a building site on the road where anybody was getting any work done. And she'd just go, and she, it was almost like her body clock went, it's 12 o'clock. I better go get the sandwiches. And she'd just go and sit with the builders and they'd throw her the end of their sandwiches. And she was putting, well, we didn't know she was doing this. And she was putting weight on. I'm going, why is she putting weight on? She does two walks a day. She's got really, you know, we really measure her food. And we were just, and then somebody said to us on the road, oh, there's Maggie. She comes down, eats all our sandwiches. Right, that'll be it then.
When we go to the beach, we've got a retriever. And when we go to the beach, he goes along the beach and just sits and begs at people's lunches, especially if they're eating pasties. And he just sits there like this, looking adorable, and they feed him pasty. And it's like, he's only got three legs. He's going to be fat anyway. He can't eat pasties.
Well, the boxer doesn't even, I've got an older one, the boxer's nearly 11, and he doesn't do that. He's not a beggar, really, unless there's sizzling meat on and then he gets up out of his bed because he can hear it and he kind of like pads over to you, but he's not that bad. There is something in the breeds, definitely, isn't there, that is greedy dogs.
Right, Annie, over to you. You get the joy of the last question.
Okay, Gabby, I swear we haven't created this question to make you feel uncomfortable. We ask it of everybody. Please really imagine that you're tucking Wendy and I into bed and that we can't sleep, and sing us the lullaby you would have sung your children.
Oh, no, it's really... I used to sing Danny Boy to them.
Oh, don't, because I'll cry. It's the most tear-jerking song on the planet.
And also my brother was called Daniel, so they used to love... I know, they used to love me singing it to them. But I don't know the words properly, so I just make up things. So I'd sing, oh, Danny Boy, the lights, and it's the pipes, but I'd say the lights are calling, and then I'd turn the lights off and from field to field and glen to glen, and then I'd be stroking her head, oh Danny Boy, and then she, just when she'd like be looking like she was asleep, she'd go, one more verse. So that was
would it not make you sad though, singing your brother's
yeah
name?
It did, but in a kind of, in that melancholy way where you feel sad but happy and you're kind of, you know, you're remembering. But I,
and nice that you're including him.
Yeah, well, they always wanted to know about him. And so they would, you know, when children are little, they have sometimes really incredible empathy and really, they really connect with things. And I remember my daughter, she was about five and she was lying on my mum's bed. My mum was getting ready to go out and my mum was babysitting, or they were staying with my mum or something. And she reached across to my brother's mass card that you give out when, you know, a funeral, was still next to my mum's bed. And she was reading it and she said, oh, Nana, I can't believe that he was only 15 he was when he died. She went, I can't believe he was only 15 when he died. She said, And he looked at my mum and she just went, that must have been so sad for you. But in a kind of way that was so connected to my mum that my mum just burst into tears because, you know, she said, I just didn't expect her to understand what, you know, what that felt like. And so when they were little, it was actually quite nice to bring him into their lives because, you know, they, there's an uncle that they never had, but they wanted to know about, and he's still their uncle. So, and there's a strong resemblance. All the boys in our family have quite a strong resemblance as well, physical resemblance. Aww, so
that's a lovely note for this to end on. Right. Thank you, Gabby, for being an amazing guest. I'm sorry I was late.
No, don't worry. It was quite dramatic.
I'm sorry I told you all of my woes in the first 3 minutes of the podcast. You missed my woes, Annie.
I'm glad that my woes this morning were quite similar to yours. And it is always when they're away, isn't it? Kenny's decided very last minute. He's a Rangers fan. So he's hopped on a plane this morning to go to Spain to watch Rangers tonight. Wow. And flying back tomorrow. And we've got this super, super busy week. It's mad. And I could really do with him being here today. But I was like, no, you've got to go. You've got to go. It only happens once in it, you know.
Have a lovely time.
Yeah, have a fun time. Yeah. What are you doing that without? It's not work. You're going away and it's not work. How does that happen?
Yeah, mine's gone on the pretense of work.
I've gone to Spain. Is he going to the Europa League final?
No, he's in Nepal.
Oh, well, good luck.
My only hope is that he's kind of like going to get a bad belly and feel bad.
No.
While he's out there.
Don't. I thought you were going to say the only hope is that he brings you back a really nice present.
Yeah, he might. He better do that. That's a given, I tell you.
Well, I hope he's back soon, safe and sound. And thank you very much. Really lovely to meet you both. Good luck.
Oh, really lovely to meet you. Thank you so much, Gabby.
Bye.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
Bye.